Welcome to Inspired By, the official podcast from National Mortgage Professional. Each episode, we bring you conversations with the most intriguing and thoughtful voices in the mortgage and housing industry. Wherever you are in your own journey, whether you're a seasoned professional or just starting out, we hope you'll be inspired by the stories and insights our guests share, just as we are. Today, I'm speaking with 40 Under 40 honoree David Kakish, who took an unconventional path from 16 years as a pastor to hitting the top 1% in mortgages, all in just 2 years. We talk about embracing rejection, making real human connections, and how faith and hard work can fuel rapid success. If you've ever wanted to rethink what it means to truly show up for your clients, this episode is for you.
Don't miss the biggest industry events with the Originator Connect Network, where you get top-tier speakers, unbeatable networking, and free NMLS classes. Elevate your career, connect with the best, and stay ahead of the game. Register for an event near you now at OriginatorConnectNetwork.com.
Hey, so all right, David, it's really great to finally meet you face-to-face. You know, as we've talked about before, the 40 under 40, we're trying to showcase, people who were in our magazine, Go Beyond the Blurb, learn your stories. And, hey, just tell me a little bit, about yourself for our audience and, we'll dive into a few questions.
Yeah. So former pastor of 16, almost 17 years. Felt like it had run its course, no scandal, nothing exciting, nothing crazy, but just felt like, hey, we've given what we could give. We're in a good spot. We want to write our own ending to the story. I just, having been a minister for a long time, I saw a lot of people fiddle out or some drama or hurt and they left broken. I'm like, hey, what if we rode off in the sunset? So I had some time to consider what I wanted to do next. I knew I'm good with finances. I'm good with people. I had done some corporate sales in the past. I was like, I like sales, W-2 jobs. You know, I tend to work hard and my employer benefits and maybe I get a cost of living raise at the end and I want to be able to receive commensurate reward for the effort I'm willing to put in. And so I knew I wanted to do commission sales. I thought about real estate, but then I was like, I don't want to have to. Honestly, two things did it for real estate. Number one, when sometimes we'd scroll through Zillow's, we were looking for houses and you'd see these like dog face barf bag listings. I'm like, I don't even want to open the pictures. And then I thought someone had to fight to get that listing. What am I going to do if that was my listing? I got to sell it. I don't want to put lipstick on pigs. I want to be able to shoot straight with people. And then I'm lazy. I don't want to leave my house. So I'm like, hey, what's an adjacent of sales? Because I wanted to be in something that people need. I don't want to convince them to want something. And so I said, mortgages, and I'm good with finances. And so I decided to do mortgages in the summer of 22, right as rates went from, 3% to 6%. About perfect time to join the industry. But we just put our head down and God was kind and it's been good. It's been almost two and a quarter, 2.5 years now in the industry. First year in, God was kind. And we finished Scotsman's Guide. So in the top 1% in the nation and we 2X'd in 2024. And I don't know what's next. I don't know if I want to work much more than this, to be honest with you, but it's been a good ride.
I was going to say that's pretty good for 2.5 years. Forget about 10 years down the road, where do you see yourself you're accomplishing this not only under 40, but in a short window under 40 with the pastor background, 5 years from now, where are you?
Hopefully spending more time with my wife and kids,
That's a great answer. In the sense that, it's a business, but we have a business to support a life and help other people and the people who are closest to us. You don't get that time back, right?
And there's a stupid, I'll speak for myself. The older I get, the cornier I get. There are phrases and turn of keys. Maybe you saw it in your teacher's mug and in fourth grade and rolled your eyes. But the older I get, I'm sappy. And I saw one that said, struggle now, enjoy later, enjoy now, struggle later kind of thing. And it really resonates with me. And I tell this awful joke about what's the difference. I have four kids and I'm married. And what's the difference between a pastor and two large pizzas? two-large pizzas can easily feed a family of six. You know, it was the ministry, not the monastery. And so, like, this is a different arena where I'm paying more in taxes than I ever made in the salary. And so we're playing a little bit of catch up here. Where do I see myself in 5 years? I'm probably jumping the gun here, but we have these stupid principles that we kind of reiterate in our house all the time. And one of them is saying yes to something is inevitably saying no to something else. Saying yes to spending is saying no to saving. Saying yes to a donut is saying no to a diet. And so we want to take a holistic inventory of, like, yes, in a lot of ways, I'm saying yes to work instead of things. And it's a sacrifice. And it's a calculated sacrifice, but what I'm really saying yes to is a long-term goal where I have more time to enjoy later, and it's not forever. So growth. It comes at an expense, and you know, idolatry is a real thing, and you got to calculate the cost sometimes. So 5 years from now, I'm hoping a little more time with family.
Idolatry is a thing. That's a great turn of phrase. Well, it sounds like, I mean, you have sort of an internal set of rules for yourself, a path that you want to follow.
It's too many.
One of them that you mentioned in the magazine profile was the embracing of rejection and failure. You know, inevitably,
no one wants to talk about that.
Well, I'm curious, like, when you make the leap from one career to another, there's a learning curve. How did you learn what you learned so that you could accomplish as much as you did over the last couple of years? That, you know, the trials and tribulations and the growth that comes with that. What did you learn and how'd you learn it?
I want to talk about embracing rejection for a little, because it's not a sexy topic. It's not something that people want to say on stage. Embrace rejection. Rejection is not. And so just a little bit of ways on how to embrace rejection and how in some way that can be freeing. Like, first and foremost, you need to find your identity in something larger than success. I mean, that is a factoid. If your identity is tied into what you do, what you accomplish, you will never feel a sense of peace. And honestly, I'm preaching to myself there. Because, or with any measure of success, when success is the goal, when you reach your goal, whatever it is, well, that's not the ceiling. It's the new floor. And anything below that feels like failure, right? Inevitably, right? We did something in year one. Everyone said, that's incredible. What's next? Well, we 2X. What's next? Right? There's never time to celebrate and feel done. And so to embrace rejection, you need to find your identity in something larger than success, right? And obviously for me, it's still faith, right? I am who I am, not based on what I do, but based on who I know and who I'm known by. And then secondly, you got to learn to outwork your self-doubt. The whole cartoon thing, the angel and the demon on your shoulders, doubt, self-doubt is a real thing. And one of the best things, I don't know how to articulate this. You can't repeat this, but my first job, I was 15 years old. I got a job at a call center. Cold calling, booking appointments for windows, doors, and vinyl siding appointments for salespeople to come in. And this was 1996. You know, you call people on their landline. The job was from 5 to 9 p.m., Monday through Friday. I was 15. I'd go in there and I'd call, and they give me a script. If they say this, do this. Oh, the script didn't work. You know, like, hey, good morning, good afternoon. I know I'm gonna. I had to just like learn to improv, and people hung up on me constantly. And so just learning to go, hey, real quick, I know there's a random call. You don't know me. Can you just do me a favor and walk over to your window? Do you hear any whistling? Do you feel, put your hand near there. Do you feel, that was on the script. But just learning what I wanted was more than my fear of losing, you know, and it became a game. Like, hey, I'm just going to accept rejection. I'm 9 no's away from the 1 yes, and just kind of learning to do that. So you got to learn to outwork your self-doubt. And then finally, success starts with doing things that others don't want to do and they don't want to fail. I mean, realistically, you got to overcome this fear. And I've thought a lot about fear, and here's the truth. I'm not like really keen on heights. So if you ask me, hey, would you jump off a 100-foot cliff? Hell no. No, I wouldn't. Hey, if you saw one of your kids drowning in the water below, would you jump off a 100-foot cliff in a heartbeat? So what you want has to be more than what you're afraid of doing. And that's a way to overcome. And with those things out of the way, like, hey, if I'm not to the measure of success, I'm not a failure. No is just a pathway to yes. And what I want is more than what I'm fearing. Now I'm willing to do the work. And then you learn and you put your head down. And so honestly, how did I do it? How did I learn? You don't know what you don't know in a new industry. I know I needed referral partners. And to do that, I'm like, what's the quickest way? Well, here's a fun part of my story. I moved from Washington State to Alabama, where I didn't know anyone. And my brokerage that I got licensed in, because I didn't know I was moving to Alabama, was not licensed in Alabama. So I couldn't originate as a new loan officer in a state where I live. You make most money where you live. So I had to learn and build a book of business remotely. And so I was like, I'm going to need a cold call. Well, I don't know what I don't know. I don't want to call these agents and look like a total idiot and then have a reputation as a total idiot in a market where I could do business. So I literally would sit there and cold call agents in like Wisconsin, where I wasn't licensed and would never be. And I just tested, like, how did I greet them? What worked? What didn't? What questions did they ask? If they asked me a good question and I'm like, that's a great question. I have no idea. And I'd write it down. The conversation was lost, but I'm mining for information and I'd go do research and find out until I kind of like, I think I'm ready. And then I started testing, you know, like, how do I want to greet them? What questions am I prepared to answer?
And that's really interesting because one of the other answers in your responses in the magazine was, you know, talking about, and this is one of my rules in my own life, question everything, right? And that you talked about experimenting, new ideas, and then iterating, testing them, seeing if they work. And it sounds like you've been doing that, you know, since you were trying to sell vinyl siding or trying to, you know, fix windows, but then when you transitioned careers, there's more of that. I'm sure you've refined the technique over the years, so you start getting some traction, start finding some answers, you've stepped into the discomfort. When was the time like when you finally realized, okay, I've stepped into the discomfort, it's not as uncomfortable anymore, like I'm gaining traction and this is really starting to work, like I can see all the hard work starting to pay off?
You know, they call it the curse of competence, and it's how we started. I've never felt that way yet, right? Like, there's never success. Any success, you know, yesterday's ceiling is tomorrow's floor. And so I'm constantly going, hey, what can we do better? What don't I know? Where do we go from here? And so that is one of my curses. I never take time to smell the roses and celebrate a win, you know? And the reality is I'm constantly focused on, you familiar with inversion theory? I learned it from Charlie Munger. Inversion theory is you take the time to ask, what would make this fail? How could I ruin this? If I wanted to set up just a dysfunctional, low-producing mortgage shop, what would I do? What are the worst things you can do to build a business? And then you go backwards, right? You reverse engineering it. Because sometimes it's easier to know, like, what not to do than what to do. And we have a way to do theology that way. And so I applied it to business as well. So I just kind of inversion theoried it a lot and constantly, success is, I don't know, the absence of what breaks it.
Okay.
Maybe is how I would say it.
I like
constantly
that.
Constantly figuring out what breaks success. Okay, we're here. What would break it? So I'm kind of to go, what shouldn't we do? What not to do? And I tell my team these rules, right? I tell my team this all the time. If you don't have time to do it right, you don't have time to do it twice. A half-assed job didn't save anyone time.
So let me, if you don't mind me asking.
Yeah.
You mentioned there, given your background as a pastor, are there other, not so much techniques, but just skills that you developed in that life that is still at the heart of you, that you carry forward now into how you approach what you do?
You know, I wasn't prepared for this question, but I love it. I mean, a few things. One, you're dealing with people. And I think we want to learn guidelines. We want to learn sales techniques. But at the end of the day, learn psychology. You're dealing with people. I mean, before recording this, we were talking about empathy and using empathy and thoughts of neighbors. And I told you then my CPA is not in the shower going, how do I save David money on his taxes this year? Right. He's not worried about me. He's not thinking about me. And I'm like, I would appreciate it if he did. If my CPA emailed me on a Tuesday randomly, you know, I was thinking about you today and I was wondering, have you guys done this or that? I'm like, I love that person. So part of inversion theory is also like, hey, what would mean a lot to me as a consumer of a service? And how do we replicate that, putting people first and convincing people, not just with our words, but with our actions? Your actions always tell on you. That's another one of our sayings, right? Like, your actions tell on you. How do we show them that we are truly for them? And I don't know who I stole this from. I'd love to give credit where credit's due, but I realized very early on, I mean, before I even joined the industry, just as a consumer of mortgages, nobody wants a mortgage, right? Nobody wants a mortgage. They want a house. You are the gauntlet they have to get through to get to the thing that they want. And so realizing what we are in the process, like, how do we make it less painful, more streamlined, more fun? How do we make it more holistic? How do we create an experience? How do we make a soul connection in this where we're not just the thing that stands in their way, the financial enema that you have to get a clean bill of health so you can go get the thing that you want. So we've realized that and then engineered a process and experience that acknowledges those things.
That's interesting.
We know what to do, what not to do to break it. We know what would mean something to us as consumers. We understand that we are a service that people aren't necessarily looking forward to. How do we make it different and better?
Fascinating. In that, a lot of what you read right now, people talk about making the process efficient, you know, whether it's using automated systems or using AI, whatever, reducing those friction points. But that the other side of that is, well, you don't have to use technology to do that. You can use the human side of things. You can connect with people. And like you said, acknowledge that this isn't the most fun process in the world, but try to make it very human. Because like you said, you're acknowledging the fact, like, we're going to get you to a place that you really want to be, and we're going to be helping with that. Again, that's very human.
And finding a way to do both.
Yeah.
So for example, I mean, I am about efficiency and automation, but still the soul connection. And so, like, one of the ways of our growth right now is we are picking up a lot of listing agents. We're doing quite a few transactions. I think I did 143 in 2024. 84% of them were purchase transactions. So there's an agent on the other side, a potential referral partner. Well, I could take the time to call them constantly, and that would take my time and probably theirs, and how do they feel about it? And so we constantly thought through the experience. And so at this point, we're at a run rate of picking up 24% of our listing agents. And I've never talked to them on the phone, not once. Mm. And yet they feel like they know me.
Mm-hmm.
So even when we get under contract, they'll get a text from me that is automated that says, hey, no need to call back. Just want to know. But the truth is, I never call them. But I started the test with no need to call back. And so they assume, hey, missed call. I guess it didn't go through. Look at this. You're getting credit for a call without. And so really thinking about efficiency with soul connection and human touch, finding a way to intentionally engineer and these little tweaks. And I don't know, maybe that's manipulative. I don't know that it is. I think people appreciate the efficiency of it.
Yeah, no, certainly, efficiency comes in all different forms, right? It's the ability to... whatever gets you to the end goal fast, but have it feel that it's being done the right way and being handled, then they'll believe in you. Like, okay, you're making this process easier for me. I have faith that it's been done right and done well, and I feel really good about this person who's at the head of it.
Yeah, and efficiency. I love that you highlighted efficiency, because I mean, I really am a slave to efficiency. I am, but also equally as important as engineering and experience. For example, when a pre-approved client goes under contract, say you pre-approved them a month and a half ago, and now they're under contract, you got to close this thing in 25 days or whatever it is. You're like, hey, I need updated pay stubs. I need this. Oh, your credit report expired. We need this. And we're going to get you submitted to underwriting. Hey, I need you to pay for an appraisal. We go right into it and forgetting, hey, these are real people who just got under contract on a house. they're agreeing to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars. They're excited. They're nervous, whatever. Does our process acknowledge them? And so I'll send them a GIF with my face superimposed on it, with this guy throwing up confetti, with a board that comes out that says, you're under contract. And there's a templated message that says, hey guys, so excited for you. I know you're probably feeling this and this. I just want you to know we're going to be with you every step of the way. Da, 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 da. So engineering experience, I saw this social experiment. I think it was the Washington Journal. I can't remember who did it. I got this famous violinist to go play in a subway. Have you ever seen this clip? It's kind of awesome when you realize it. And they're thinking, hey, this guy like fills out concert halls. If we put him in a subway and he has a disguise on, he's just playing, people are going to surround him. And they recorded videos of this. And he played, I think, for like an hour, 2 hours. And in the time of that hour, like seven people stopped to actually watch him. And I think he made $3, $5 in tips. And yet, if you know who he is, you will pay hundreds of dollars. And an auditorium is going to be filled to hear this guy play. And I thought about that, and my takeaway kind of was, is our process the concert hall or the subway? Because sometimes it doesn't matter who you are, what you can do. Like, are you setting the scene for them to receive and hear and feel what you're doing? The violinist, the violinist, his skill is the skill, the music is the music, and yet the forum, the setting, changes how they experienced it. And so like, hey, let's take that seriously as well. So that's what I mean about engineering experience as well as maximizing efficiency. And I think we tend to do one or the other. The one that'll make us the most money and not necessarily, I don't know, and being cynical there.
Yeah, well, it's value versus perceived value. And they go hand in hand, that the perception of you bringing that value is showing them I'm bringing you that value. So step into the concert hall. You don't have to come into the subway to get the experience.
Truthfully, that's it, right? We constantly hear in this digital era, visibility beats ability. And I'm going, how about both?
Yeah, 100%.
What if we could do both?
One last question to throw at you, and I'll let you go. As much as I'm really enjoying chatting with you, you mentioned mentoring, and this is something that pings in quite a number of people's responses and coursing throughout this industry, is this idea of, you know, we can't get there alone. And some people fight to do that, to get there alone, but then they are very much motivated to give back and help others. And so what role has mentoring played in your life and in your career, and or how you see yourself trying to mentor others who will follow?
Yeah, I mean, I have a twofold answer to this, and maybe they contradict each other, but I am a real person, and I'm a walking anomaly in so many ways, and we're all hypocrites. It's just a matter of extent and what issues. But I mean, what motivates me to give back and mentor others is just, we're blessed to be a blessing. Nothing I have is anything I've earned. It's all been freely given. Like I say, I work hard and I do this, cool. Like, who puts breath in my lung? Who tells my heart to beat time and time again? Like, no, God does. And he gave it to me, and it's not mine to have, it's mine to steward. And so I don't know, maybe it's corny, but there was a prayer by an old theologian named John Wesley, and he said, may what I have be like sands in my hand. The tighter I grip it, the quicker it slips through my fingers. And so like, we want to live with open hands, and everything we have is for anyone and everyone. Like I genuinely want to love my neighbor and share, and it doesn't matter. I mean, the other day I spent an hour with a rival loan officer telling him how to structure a file because he denied it, and they came to me, and it was actually an easy file. He just didn't see something. And it's painful. Like I'm giving away 10 grand on this deal, but if it's the right thing to do, you do the right thing. You know, I truly believe that. Now let me totally lose all that goodwill and credibility. I do get frustrated in the process. I get frustrated because as much as I want to share, it comes from my heart. Sometimes I get a lot of messages. And there's this sense of entitlement that I owe them, you know, like, hey, what are you doing of this? I'm like, I need to just drop what I'm doing because you random person sent me a direct message, you know, and give me the secrets of my life. I get a lot. Hey, can we get on a call? Can we do this? And I'm going, I haven't seen kids in 2 days, you know?
And I've been on a lot of those calls, to be truthful, and a lot of them go the same exact way. What one thing are you doing? What is your secret? What is this like gnosis that if I tell you this one thing, it's going to unlock everything? And that is frustrating for me, because the answer is that there's not one thing. It's I want it more than you do. And I don't believe you really want it. And I think you want a shortcut. I can buy leads. I can go to open houses. It's not one thing. It's all the things consistently, time and again, showing up, caring for people, pursuing excellence, engineering processing. It's all the things you don't want to do. And you're hoping I'm going to tell you an answer. You know, there's no Ozempic to success. I don't know what to say, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm a firm believer that a lot of that success, however you define it, it comes not from what you do, but who you are. And because if it's who you are, you're bringing that to every phase, every day, to every connection and every relationship, and it will stem from that. If you're looking for those methods, steps, 10 easy steps to this, that's just something you're doing. You're going through the motions, and you're probably not going to get there.
I'll end with this, because I'm sure I've talked too much, but I saw this like hokey thing that said something to the effect of like, when we watch those sci-fi movies about time travel, they always, you know, the butterfly effect. If you go in the past and change one small thing, you significantly and unrecognizably alter the future. Right? One small change, one little thing. You took a left turn instead of a right turn. And I actually do believe in the butterfly effect. Everything is cause and effect, right? Like one small decision. You decided to move here and not there. You didn't meet that person who then whatever. But if that is true, if one little action in the past can radically alter our future, well, then how much weight are you putting into the decisions you make today? It's going to build or break your future. You right now, you know, and that's what I want to say. My heart is to give everything. I struggle against entitlement that you own me or I work for you. I don't. I want to give it to you. Don't try to take it from me. And there's not an easy way to do it. It's going to take hard work every single day. And I'm not touting myself. I'm an idiot. I don't know anything. Maybe I'm just lucky and I'm not trying to say, listen to me. But if I am saying anything, that is worth listening to. It's hard work consistently put people first over profits, you know, just the tenets of running a good, honest business. And I do think that works. I think empathy still works in 2025.
100%. And just to end with this, you are, you said you're not a smart person. You are a smart person, but more importantly, I think you're a very wise one. So thank you. Yeah. Thank you for coming on. Hopefully the people who are listening learn a thing or two. Again, congratulations on being 40 under 40. This has been a real delight.
Awesome, man. Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to Inspired By from National Mortgage Professional. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation and found ways to connect what our guests shared with your own life and career. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, follow us on social media, and head over to NMP's website to sign up for our weekly issue. We'll be back soon with more inspiring guests and valuable insights. Until next time, be well.